In San Diego this week, more than 700 people are trading words at the national championships of the game Scrabble. Among them is Wall Street Journal reporter and NPR contributor Stefan Fatsis, who fell under Scrabble's spell 5 years ago. As part of our series Present at the Creation, Stefan Fatsis explores the unlikely origins of an iconic American board game.
This is the sound of my obsession. For me, a jangling bag of Scrabble tiles is a rush of anticipation, excitement, fear, and hope. Will I pull Nirvana out of the darkness of the tile bag or a pile of junk? In my quest for Scrabble greatness, I've memorized thousands of arcane and even obsolete words, from ah-ah to okwasa to fut to zeroth. The deeper I sank into the abyss of words, the more I needed to trace the game back to its roots, to Alfred Mosher Butts, who in 1931 began work on what would become one of the world's most popular board games.
What I'm getting out now are some of the prototypes of Scrabble.
Robert Butts is the caretaker of his great uncle Alfred's personal effects, a trove of Scrabble artifacts.
His first game was called Lexico, L-E-X-I-K-O. Whoops, there goes one of the pieces.
Original plywood tiles adorned with letters in blue India ink spill from a tattered box that once contained chocolate mints. Folders bulge with Butts's meticulous hash mark tallies of letters and words from pages of the New York Times, New York Herald Tribune, and Saturday Evening Post. Robert Butts unfurls sheets of architect's linen on which Alfred designed the game. To me, this stuff is divinely inspired genius. But to Alfred Butts, a short, quiet, unassuming man, inventing a word game was a desperate effort by a laid-off architect to make some money during the Depression. In 1986, at the age of 87, Butts met with the Young Inventors Club of Tenafly, New Jersey.
Mr. Butts?
Yes?
What were you doing when you thought up the idea of Scrabble?
Well, I wasn't doing anything. That's the trouble. I didn't have anything to do. I didn't have any job. So I thought I'd try to invent a game.
Using baseboard molding for the tile racks, Butts assembled Lexico in his walk-up apartment in the New York borough of Queens. In the fall of 1933, he began selling the word-building game on his own for $1.50, but no game company was interested. Robert Butts pulls out a rejection letter from Parker Brothers.
This is dated 1934. Dear sir, our new game committee has carefully considered the game which you so kindly sent us in for examination. While the game no doubt contains considerable merit, we do not feel it is adaptable to our line.
Butts persevered. He decided that the problem with Lexico was that it didn't have a board, so he constructed a grid resembling a crossword puzzle. He gave each letter a point value and created premium squares that doubled or tripled the value of letters and words. He tinkered for years. His precision resulted in a game that perfectly balances skill and luck, risk and reward. John Williams is executive director of the National Scrabble Association.
Think of how different baseball would be if the bases were 100 feet apart or 75 feet apart. It's kind of the same. You know, seven letters ended up being perfect. A grid of 15 squares and it ended up being just perfect.
Butts named his new game Crisscross Words. He sold it on his own again and was rejected again. He had all but given up when he was approached in 1947 by a man named James Bruneau, who wanted to start a little business. Bruneau gave Butts a small royalty, and he renamed the game Scrabble because he liked the sound of the word, which means to claw or grope frantically. He added the 50-point bonus for using all seven tiles at once. Bruneau did better than Butts, but Scrabble was still a money loser. That is until Bruneau returned from a week-long vacation in 1952 and found not the usual orders for a couple hundred sets, but orders for 2,500. Apparently, the chairman of Macy's had played the game and told his salesman to stock it. Other stores followed suit. More than 20 years after Alfred Butts began designing a word game, a craze was born, and all those companies that rejected Scrabble realized that they had made a very costly mistake. Douglas Bolton was a young executive assistant to the owner of Catico Ellis, a Chicago toy company that had passed on Scrabble because it was just another anagrams game. He remembers the early frenzy.
Shipments were backed up for weeks and sometimes months. People calling on the telephone, calling stores, calling salesmen, calling factories. People were standing in line. There were also some stories, perhaps apocryphal, about people getting into small fights, you know, over the availability of the last piece of the product in the store.
More than a million sets of Scrabble sold in 1953, an astonishing 3.8 million in 1954. It made sense. Scrabble was about knowledge and creativity in a prosperous post-war country that was embracing education and leisure time. Saturday Review magazine said, "The new word game has practically routed canasta among the upper IQs of the nation." During a visit to New York, England's Queen Mother bought a set. The game settled into steady sales and into the culture. Scrabble has shown up everywhere, from The Simpsons and Seinfeld, to Rosemary's Baby, to a novel by Vladimir Nabokov, to a game show hosted by Chuck Woolery. In the popular imagination, it's a totem of Eisenhower-era family values. Just listen to this TV commercial from Hasbro, Scrabble's current owner.
Yeah, it's Scrabble, America's good time game. It's Coco and its kids, old stories and grins. It's rainy weekends you hope will never end. It's Scrabble, America's good time game.
But at the same time that Scrabble was filling America's closets, it was becoming much more than a boxed game. Players began studying dictionaries and developing strategy. Scrabble turned out to be as complex as chess or backgammon, as much about geometry and probability as about words, a game to which people could devote a serious chunk of their lives.
Hi, I'm Joel Sherman. I'm 40 years old. I live in the Bronx, and I am a professional Scrabble player.
Sherman doesn't actually make a living playing Scrabble, but he doesn't have a job either, and the game fills his time. So it was no surprise that after Sherman won the World Scrabble Championship in 1997, he thanked Alfred Mosher Butts.
Who else could I thank but a guy who, like me, was slight of frame, a bit nerdy, and still managed to create a thing of beauty and a focal point for my entire life.
Alfred Butts didn't get rich from Scrabble, but the royalties allowed him and his wife to live comfortably. He didn't invent any other successful games, and he was perplexed by the tournament scene. But late in life, when he was living in a nursing home in upstate New York, Butts would ask his great-nephew Robert to play.
Some days he'd make wonderful plays. He'd play Ox and Zai with the X on a triple letter score going two ways. And other times he would just set down gibberish and he'd say, you know, it's just not his day, I guess. But he was able to play a little Scrabble basically right up to the end of his life. They told us that you hold on to the things that are dearest to you the longest.
Alfred Butts died in 1993. Today, his game sells around 3 million sets a year worldwide in 23 languages. And it will be his signature on the giant novelty check for $25,000 that will be awarded to the national Scrabble champion later this week. For NPR News, I'm Stefan Fatsis.